Okay, so this is another Discan Civoli talk here. My collaborator is Juan Chen at Goddard Space Flight Center. Let's see, is there any, Okay, so this is concerned with soft X-ray transients in the quiescent stage. And I guess you've already heard a lot of talks about this stuff before. Lasota has given a lot. Oh, okay. Okay, well, I think still most of the people are probably pretty familiar with this area. If you look at soft X-ray transients in their low state, then you observe an X-ray flux of like 10 to the 30 or 10 to the 32 ergs per second. And as a specific example of that, there was this article a few years ago by McClintock et al. Where they presented the results of a 30,000 second observation of A06 to 20. And they just saw a very faint flux. They saw about 40 photons. And the inferred X-ray luminosity was about 6 times 10 to the 30 ergs per second. And the X-ray temperature was about 0.16 keV. Now, Jean-Pierre and others have pointed out that this isn't at all what you'd expect in the strict interpretation of the Discan stability. If you don't have any extra add-on to the basic Discan stability theory, then you'd predict that for an inner edge of the disk of about 10 to the 7 centimeters, that the rate of accretion would be about 10 to the 6 grams per second. Or actually, I should say that's the upper limit on what the rate of accretion could be at the inner edge. And so that would give you, if you assumed a canonical 10% efficiency, then that would give you a pretty small flux. So, you know, that's about 10 to the 5 smaller than what's observed. And the temperature would also be much cooler. It would be, you know, down by about 10 to the 3 from what's observed. So, you can exclude the standard model for the quiescent stage. And that's not a surprise, actually, because the whole thing was cooked up to explain the outbursts that are seen in these types of objects here. So it's not a surprise that it wouldn't really account for the what you see in the quiescent stage. Well, I think he was
because found a very weak flux.
Yeah.
And it was in opposition to the mass transfer.
Right? Yeah.
So it's not, I discovered the jet and I think it's a sociology of science, nothing more.
Well, but they also, Well, but another thing in the article is they also present HST observations of what you they infer to be sort of a hotspot flux at that outer edge, and they infer that the rate of accretion or the rate at which the matter is hitting the outer edge is, you know, like 10 to the minus 11 solar masses per year. So I think that they made that statement just because whatever is happening at the inner edge is so much smaller than what's happening at the outer edge. So anyhow, that led Narayan et al. To apply the ADAF model to the quiescent stage of soft X-ray transients. And when they tried to model A06 to 20 specifically, they found parameters such that you would have an M dot onto the central object of about 10 to the 15 grams per a second. And yet, the accretion efficiency would be quite small, something like 10 to the minus 5 or 10 to the minus 4. And so, you would get the X-ray flux that's observed. Well, that it comes out of the ROSAT spectrum. They just tried to fit that. It obviously wasn't very well constrained because, I mean, there's very poor statistics on it. And it might just... Yeah, it's pretty broad. If you look at the ADAS spectrum, it's pretty flat in terms of nu F nu versus nu. So it's just a bit of a coincidence. Well, I mean, see, I don't think they can really, you know, say, oh, this is a thermal spectrum. This is just a very sort of crude estimate here.
Well,
and it might.
I think it's a bit soft in the lot of that, yeah, because what I've got to do is sort of falls steeply.
It would be at the lower edge, yeah.
Well, I mean,
still yeah. Yeah, I didn't make an overhead of their fit. Here's the fit. Okay. Well, so now I think most people think that there's some kind of an ADAF in these systems in the low state, but I'm... There's just a few things that I'm concerned about here. I don't know. I started to put criticisms, but a lot of these are more concerns, I guess. I mean, even if they're true, they wouldn't necessarily say that the thing's not true. Well, I think it's really good, all the work that people are doing on ADAPs. But everything that people have been doing so far is mainly just looking at steady state structures. And so when you look at a steady state structure, all you can do is just make sure that it's self-consistent. Okay, but if you have an actual system, you have to be able to see if you can somehow get into that physical state. So if the disk is in a different state, then you have to consider how it gets from that other state into the ADAF state. Okay, and one of the things you have to do here is that you have to, I don't think that you could just somehow make a transition from the standard accretion disk state to the ADAF state. You have to invoke some kind of evaporative process in order to be able to supply the ADAF. Okay, so there have been some articles that tried to look at how these two different ideas might fit together. I mean, how you might be able to go from the standard, you know, geometrically thin state to the ADAS state. Okay, so in this article here, for instance, they said, okay, we have some kind of an ADAS state, and then further out you have M dot constant with R. So if you looked at M dot as a function of R, it would just be flat within this outer part of the disk here. Well, I think one objection to that is just that the viscous time scale is very slow, and so it would be difficult for the disk to come into a steady state on a time scale which is, say, you know, on a time scale in between outbursts here. So this is what a typical expression for the viscous time scale is in the outer edge with all of these parameters scale to what that they would be. There were some other articles here which tried to say that, well, they tried to look at, you know, how you would get also from the high state where you have a standard geometrically thin accretion disk to the 8F state. There was an interesting article by Mina Shige in which he said that he had these little sketches in which he had solutions for the 8F state and an optically thin state and the standard state. Okay, so this this little sketch here shows the M dot sigma relationship for large radii. This is just the standard Eskin curve here. This is the ionized state and the neutral state. And branch 2 here is an optically thin state in which you have cooling by Bremsstrahlung. Okay, so in this article here, they claim that as you go to smaller r here, that this curve 2 shifts over, and for some small r, curve 2 actually intersects here before you get down to the neutral state. And so you wouldn't be able to have the limit cycle operating, but you'd have some other limit cycle in which you get from the optically thin state over to the 8F state. So this is one here is just the standard hot ionized state, which is also optically thick. Two is the optically thin state, and then three is the 8F state. Okay, well that's...
So at what end of that's state one and two merge?
Well, that's what I'll show. Yeah, that's what I'll show. That's the next overhead here.
Sorry, well, but I remember the optically thin Bremsstrahlung would be a thermally unstable state.
That's right.
Like
it is.
There's a slight positive slope in here.
This is a different play.
Yeah, that would be if you had it in terms of effective to the temperature.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to get to what the estimate is of the M.
This is one of the possibilities we discussed in the paper, and we discussed the possibility that the transition radius is, I mean, the disk is big, and the transition radius is so big that the outer part of the disk is on the stable part branch. And your argument about this was done is not relevant, because this is the part of the disk that is always stable, so it is stable. If you move, then if you move the transition radius closer, then of course the disk is never in a steady state. But if it is in a steady state, it never takes part in the element.
Yeah, but I think it would be difficult for it to come into a steady state.
It's stable. I mean, this is a very similar paper about the Myers. But then, of course, you cannot apply the disk stability model.
I'm saying it would be stable, but it just over the time scale of the duration of the, like say if you have an outburst happening every 30 or 40 years, it would be slow.
There's a paper coming by Christian, Jean-Marie, Ramesh, and myself on this. When you calculate this, you find the
benefit. Yeah, well this is where I mean, I tried to get that thing to work just by having, well, this is the local M dot of R here, and these are 10-year time steps here. And it was trying to come into a steady state, but it was too slow. It just couldn't do it.
That is but,
yeah. Okay, well, let's see here. Okay. Yeah. Okay, well, here's another sketch of the Minashige idea here. So this is just the same thing I had on the other overhead before. So they're just claiming that at large R, you'd have some space between this optically thin state and the standard optically thick state, and that as you go to smaller R, this curve shifts over, and then at some R, this will intersect with that one. And so you'll have this type of a limit cycle operating in the outer part of the disk, and then this type of a limit cycle operating in the inner edge. And so when two touches up here, since this is thermally unstable, if you come down here and then get to the thermally unstable stage, then you have a transition to this optically thin ADAF state. And so you have a limit cycle operating in that style. Okay, so...
So again, my question is, what is the end of the point C?
Okay, well, I've got one more... Yeah, I've got one more overhead to show, and then I'll get to that. Okay, so let me just show the... this is just a review of the criterion for thermal stability. So this is just to show how the optically thin state with cooling by Bremsstrahlung is thermally unstable. This is just the criterion for thermal stability. You just look at d log C by d log H at constant surface density, and then compare that to d log H by d log uppercase H to d log lower H. And uppercase H is the heating function, and then uppercase C is the cooling function. So this is the expression for the heating. Nu is what's called the kinematic viscosity coefficient. And in the alpha prescription, this is just 2/3 alpha omega H squared. Okay, so this is the basic expression for the heating. So at constant sigma, this just goes as H squared. Okay, so let me just go through why the optically thin case is unstable and the thick case is stable. Okay, if you have an optically thin state with cooling by Bremsstrahlung, then you can express the cooling as tau, the optical depth, times sigma t to the fourth. And tau is just the opacity times the surface density. So this is just the expression for free, or well, actually this is an approximate expression that comes out of tabular opacities. But the basic form here is density times temperature to the minus 3.5. And then, well, this is just the definition of the surface density, and this is just what you get from hydrostatic equilibrium. So the expression, since you essentially have a t to the fourth here, and then you're dividing by t to the fourth, there isn't any dependence on temperature. So this is just sigma squared times the Keplerian frequency. And so because there isn't any H here, the dependence on H is smaller than that for the heating function. So you know you'd have zero compared to two, so that would be an unstable state. Now, if you look at the same opacity here, but if you look at an optically thick structure, then instead of having the tau in the numerator here, you have it in the denominator. And so instead of getting the t's canceling out, you get like a t to the eighth power. And t goes as h squared, so that turns out to be h to the 6th to 18. Okay, so it's a very steep function of h. So that's why this one turns out to be thermally stable. Okay, so let me work out the estimate for the point at which the optically thick and optically thin states have an m dot that's equal. Okay, so this is just the same sketch that I had before. If you have these are all assumed to be steady state structures here. So if you have a steady state solution, then h is just 3 over 8 pi omega squared times m dot. So this is the scaling for the cooling in the limit where you have optically thin cooling by Bremsstrahlung. This is just the same expression that I had before. If you use this, if you say the heating and the cooling are equal, then you can solve for m dot in this state two. So it's it just goes as sigma squared. Now you can also go through and use a Shakura and Sunyaev type scaling for to get a relation between the surface density and the rate of accretion in the hot ionized state, in the optically thick state. And if you set this surface density equal to this one, you can solve for the rate of accretion at which these two things would be equal. So this would just be able to touch this other one here. Okay, so it turns out the m dot for that is actually quite small. All the r's and the m's and everything can cancel out, and you just have this simple expression here. So it's just m dot is about 10 to the 7 grams per second times alpha to the 4th. Ten to the minus 11. So typically you want to have this transition occur at about 10 to the 15 or so grams per second, and so you need alpha of about 10 squared for that. So I think the alphas you typically infer are about 0.1. You can also see that if you just you can cook up a similar scaling for the optical depth on this state here, and you can also show that you have quite a high optical depth in the outburst state. Even if you scale to a very small rate of accretion, you know, if you scale to say 10 to the 13 grams per second, you still have a very optically thick structure. So I think it's difficult to have you know, this sort of a transition here between between the optically thick state and the ADAF state. Okay, it doesn't. I mean, this argument, it's not really to say that you can't get into the ADAF state. It's just that you have to have. It's just that you won't be able to, you know, spawn to instantaneously make this transition here. You have to have some type of additional process. Okay. Okay, so if you do have some type of evaporation occurring in the inner etcher, then that actually helps out in some aspects as far as the disk instability is concerned. But actually, before I get to this, why don't I show this movie here? Let's see. Okay, I didn't really give a lot of background on the limit cycle instability because I thought I would just show a little movie here. This was put together by Richard Wade at Penn State. And he just used some time-dependent slices from some computations that I sent him. So, let's see. Okay, so these are just, this shows how the effective temperature changes as you go from the quiescent stage into the outburst state and then back to the quiescent state. So this shows, this is just after the outburst stage is over and you're accumulating material in the inner edge. At some point, the instability starts. Let's see, let me do that over again. It's automatically doing it. Yeah, so you can see that this is when the whole thing is in a hot ionized state, then a cooling front starts at the outer edge and sweeps inwards, and you actually have a lot of very strong outflow from the part of the disk in the hot state to the cool state, and eventually you're all the way back in the cool state. So here the inner part of the disk is in a hot ionized state, and then after it's over, you're completely back in the neutral state. And you can see that the scaling where you have the effective temperature is going as R to the minus 3 in force approximately in the outburst state. Okay, so I think that's all the review I'll say about the basic disk instability. I'll let it go through one more time. Okay, maybe that's enough. Well, let's stop this. Okay. Okay, so if you just have these are time-dependent computations where I'm trying to get the limit cycle thing to explain outbursts in these soft X-ray transients. If you just have the basic model operating here, you tend to have a lot of small outbursts that are starting at the inner edge here. This is the log of the accretion onto the central object here. And so at the peak of that outburst here, you're going up to about 10 to the 18 grams per second onto the central object here. Well, if you just have a basic limit cycle operating and you don't have any, additional process operating, then you tend to get a lot of these small outbursts here, which are triggered down near the inner edge. If you have some kind of evaporation a material from the inner edge here. And I just used a very simple a formula to get that. Then, since you're taking material out of the inner edge, you tend to eliminate a lot of these small amplitude outbursts here. And the more and the stronger you have the evaporation, the more efficient you are at preventing these small outbursts here. And this is something like this light curve, or this one, are pretty much what you'd want to get, because the recurrence time for outbursts in these objects is something like 40 to 60 years. Okay, and then...
John, in the removal formula, what is the time scale? The d sigma dt equation.
Uh-huh.
So d sigma dt equals sigma or something, but then what are the units of time?
Oh, this. Yeah, this is the units of it. So 100 grams per centimeter. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then to get these ones, see, I took this expression here and I multiplied this expression by 10 to the minus x, and x is 4, 3,
right.
And a 2.
Right.
No, I guess the opposite of that, 2. Well, it's, yeah, there isn't any evaporation here, and then there's small here. So I guess it's 4, 3, and 2. Okay, so... So anyhow, this collaborator that I've got, Chen, he was always asking me, well, could you get the same type of effect here if you just said that the cooling front isn't able to propagate all the way into the inner edge if the cooling front just stalls? And I resisted doing that since there wouldn't be, I mean, he didn't have any, you know, physical reason for why the cooling front would stall. But eventually I thought, well, I'll go ahead and try it just to see if anything interesting comes out. Oh, yeah?
As I mentioned, there's a paper almost submitted to the evaporation, and doing this work, the condition is really strong evaporation. We never get recurrence times longer than 10 years. It's the alpha cold is 0.01. The problem is, I mean, you can get almost infinite recurrence time, but then It is the result of the fact that the transitionary radius is very close to the stability index. So after this, it becomes marginally stable. And I think, according to our calculations, so to get 50 years, you need an alpha to the minus 3.
Yeah, I think the alphas which that I have are smaller.
Operation has, but doesn't solve the problem for very long.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. The alphas that I've got, I think, are still smaller than what you've been assuming. These are actually...
Or
10 to the minus 3. See, this is the one... Yeah, it's like a 10 to the minus 3 in the cold state. So I think it's consistent with what you were saying. Okay, so anyhow,
So the conclusion is evaporation doesn't lead to longer, contrary to our speculation. Evaporation itself doesn't lead to the long enough recurrence time.
Yeah, that's right. If you have the same alphas that you had for the other, yeah. If you have alpha 10 to the minus and 2. Okay, so...
It is, of course, a problem.
Yeah.
In view of the nature of viscosity, et cetera, how to do that.
Yeah.
Which I understand now, it's still very different from getting alpha from minus 2.
Yeah, it's a problem.
Because minus 2 is smaller than minus 2, but not than minus 3, or?
They have
that
simulation space. Seeing 10 to the minus 2.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can also eliminate these small outbursts here if you just say that the cooling front is unable to propagate inward of some certain R. And I've run three different trials here where these numbers here give the exponent, the R is 10 to the X centimeters. So this would be that the cooling front can't get below 10 to the 8.5 centimeters, 10 to the 9 centimeters, and 10 to the 9.5. And so if you have, and so effectively what you're doing here is you're keeping a hot ionized state even in the quiescent stage. Well, there's no, Juan just said, you know, go ahead and try it. So there isn't any reason. No. There's no real physical reason. It's just to see what comes out of it. Yeah.
In between, it's a violent, unstable force. So you get a lot of small outbursts in between. Big outbursts. As we show with some of this neon and Jordan in our paper.
Yeah, I know that article.
Things like that.
Well,
if a part is called in between, it's a lot unstable.
Oh.
The gradients are very steep. So how can you avoid,
I'm not sure. I mean, I just added one statement to the code here. I just said, if the cooling front tries to propagate within some certain R here, then just stop it. So I'm not sure why. I mean, this state here would be stable. I mean, this is stable in the hot state, and that's stable in the cold state. And I'm not sure why we're not seeing any oscillation in the interface. There are gradients, across these two states here. I mean, you have, in fact, on this, there was one.
In the function are continuous, when you go from hot, from the, in other language, from the hot branch to the low branch in R, then you have to go through the intermediate branch in one state.
Well, the disk always tries to adjust to a state in which the local dm by dt is continuous. So you can see that this is a sequence showing the evolution through the quiescent stage, and it is trying to get into a steady state. See, I'm adding some m dot at the outer edge here, and as the quiescence period goes on, the m dot at the inner edge is going up and up and up in response to this high m dot here.
So from our simulation of a very similar idea with some physics, Andrew King, eliminate the inner part of the disk, and then we keep it in ionized state. And so we simply simulate it. And of course, there are a lot of small outbursts between big outbursts because of the very unstable region.
Yeah. Well, I can
even follow it on the escape, so I don't see.
Well, I think you might be getting some additional feedback if you have irradiation also. I mean, if there's no irradiation, you don't have the additional degrees of freedom. There's no coupling between m dot, the inner edge, and the outer edge here.
Yeah. Still, I don't see how it can avoid having an unstable region.
Yeah.
Well, reduce it to almost nothing, judging from the front in the paper.
Well, there's probably something about this artificial statement that I have, just to have the cooling front stop. I mean, I'm not sure why it doesn't bounce outwards a little bit. It just stops. But that just, yeah. So anyhow, this let me show the summary for the three different trials here. This is what, well, the McClintock et al. Observations of A06 20 were about a third of the way through the quiescent interval. So I took three time slices from each of these three trials that correspond to the state of the disk a third of the way through the quiescent stage. So, for example, this is the local m dot of r as a function of r here. So this is, you know, m dot. You have this permanent hot state in the inner state here, and then this is the rate at which it's being added to the outer edge. So, you know, as I showed earlier, it's trying to come into steady state, but you know, it's just that the viscous time scale is so slow out here that it's not able to do that. And then this is the temperature profile. This is for these three different trials. And this is the profile of the effective optical depth. Now, in the McClintock et al. Article, they were inferring an X-ray flux such that if you assumed about 10% accreting efficiency, it would correspond to this curve. Now, if you look at, they had a constraint on both the X-ray flux and the to temperature. But if you look at the temperature that we have for this curve here, it's actually quite a bit cooler than what they observed. So I think the net outcome here is that this doesn't really work. No, it's too cool. So, again, this is a summary of what was in the McClintock et al. They inferred, you know, about 6 times 10 to 30 ergs per second, and this is their inferred X-ray, the inferred temperature, which is about 2 times 10 to the 6 K. Now, the best fit of the trials that we had was the one in which we had the cooling front stall at 10 to 9 centimeters, because that that produces an M dot at the inner edge of about 6 times 10 to the 10 grams per second. And so if you assume an accretion efficiency of about 10%, then epsilon c squared is 10 to the 20. And so you just add 20 to this exponent here. Unfortunately, the effective temperature at the inner edge is only about 2 times 10 to the 5. So it's about 10 times too small, so it's still much too cool. And you could also, if you just do a very simple estimate of the effective temperature, you can also, you know, just get a real crude estimate of what this would be if you just think of the inner part of the disk as just being, you know, a Shakura and Sunyaev type state in which you've got it in the outburst stage. And if you just scale to the values of M dot, you know, in the inner part of the disk, and R for the inner, and the mass of the central object, you also get about, you know, 10 to the 5 K. So this, I mean, if this were, you know, a way, if this were a very incorrect estimate here, then you still might be able to somehow have this be the right model, but I think that, you know, it probably couldn't be off a factor of 10. So anyhow, that's it.
Uh-huh. As you know, you remember that an unpublished paper by Craig Wheeler and co-workers, in which they get around and use the disk space.
Yeah.
Hope, and they haven't grafted up. I think you're expecting it, they get it from the paper.
Yeah.
But so-called the physics group, they call it the same. They also get the right, they're very proud to get the right flag. Or like luminosity, but they have problems with the effective temperature. But I think the reason is exactly the same. You saw the wind wave, they claim that they caught something. The remaining fourth part has the same property. You agree with that? Right?
Yeah, I think so.
So it has,
and I think it's hard to avoid this very simple estimate here. I mean, even though I was doing some pretty complicated stuff here, but ultimately, I mean, if the cooling fan stalls, you can basically think of the inner part of the disk as just, you know, a standard steady state disk. So, yeah.
Yeah, but it's okay since you don't know the reason for this from the start.
Yeah. Yeah. So
at high equation rates, we'd probably be in the middle region of this gradient, and so electron scattering would correct this formula. But at these low equation rates, I guess we're still in the so-called outer region of that.
Yeah,
but you don't control this equation rate.
I understand. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah. Okay. There's one on B404
6,
and that was much.
It's 6 × 10⁻⁴ and another one.
So yeah, from black body spectrum.
They show the black body spectrum. They show this.
No, because this can simply come from post plasma. Why does it need to come from the disk?
Hot plasma, but you know, we have a binary system. We have a black spot and this. Where is the hot plasma supposed to be?
No, inside. I mean, this.
Oh. Inside what, sorry?
That's exactly
the model. The other model, the model, says the hot plasma is also an other.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's.
Yeah, I think that's.
This is the proposed solution. I understand John was perceived that there is another possibility.
Yeah,
Like body type with a cutoff button that is a power rod, then we can rule out all those models altogether.
What
I mean, of this type in which we try to get high enough temperature of in this.
I think you don't do that, I think it's a rule out from the
Well, we have better thing now.
Yeah, but the conclusion is that you can rule it out, so.
I think the outcome of all this is still that the ADAP is the preferred, or some, you know, it might not be an ADAP exactly, but something like that would be the preferred model. Yeah.
This is not the first attempt, because at least in the case of Warp Novi, when it was called White Wolf, when there was an attempt by Andrew King to say that, you know, the keep out the, you know, you don't see actually the UV, but also that this is the job that the dimension of the keyword that you want to put it. This to me that the same problem of the quiescent luminosity appears in Warp Novi, where they say the model also predicts in many cases an attrition rate which is 2 or 3 orders of magnitude, too low compared to observation. So it's not connected to this. Mm-hmm. It's not connected with the central body, it's connected with the disk itself. It's just happening in the disk. Clearly, that's what happened.
Yeah. Well, I think also another trouble with the King et al. Is that.
He's King solo.
Oh, is he the only one on that? Yeah. Is that you? You wouldn't get enough of an amplitude for the dwarf nova outburst. I mean, if you just look at the numbers in their article.
Oh, you mean the latest article? The latest article is
yeah, no, there was the one that was out about a year ago or so. I mean.
Yeah, so that just was, you know, yeah.
The amplitude would be too small. You only get about a 2 magnitude outburst.
We did the simulation of the model.
Yeah. But what's the amplitude of the burst?
You can give the amplitude, but it's a lot of small. It depends on the radius of the. Depends on the mass of the white dwarf. But you get a lot of this, and never seen in all the numbers.
Yeah.
In between, always. And there's a paper by Rudy Stern claiming that they dumped it. The small outburst, and we couldn't get from Rudy. It would have been better.
Is there another complication? What happens to value alpha? What happens to value alpha, like in the real estate? How do you infer you need alpha cold and alpha hot?
How do you infer it? They just by fitting. You know, it depends. this is a very good question. And normally, to get the amplitude, you need that. There's a very good description of that in John's new article from 1903 or something. To get the right amplitude of the output, so you need a right amplitude between the central, the mid-plane temperature, and the loss in the high scale. And if you just keep alpha constant, you have just little outbursts. This is the first thing. The second, if you want to get only one outburst, but then if you want to produce a cycle, and you want to fit also the recurrent stuff, and then with a single alpha, you would never get, I don't think that you want 30 years, you can observe the time. But then the 2 weeks, you need for, so there are 2 reasons as well. One is the amplitude, the other is the recurrence. So for the amplitude, you just need the ratio.
Yeah.
Okay, but we try to, this was my idea, that in the end, let's say, why don't we have an alpha equal to 10, or even 4, and 0.1. But then you don't get the decay amplitude. So simply to force in the program of the model of an alpha hot around 0.1 and alpha cold between 0.01 and 0.001, depending on the system. And in fact, if you look at the system that requires 0.01 or 0.001, there seems to be, you know, they behave differently. But if you look at the, you know, accretion rate, mass transfer rate, you know, property of the white rock, you cannot see why would they do that and not the others. That's speculation. It is depends on the magnetic field which is accreted from the second barrier and all that. It is a very, very low, massive and sequence jets before the then order becomes a general degenerative field is something to the binary. But my problem is this explanation, that I see systems which have the same orbital field of being the same type of secondary, and they burst every 2 weeks or something. So there's a big mistake. And there's one system in which if you take the distance of the model phase value, just by the argument of how much is how much mass in it, you require a alpha of Tendermint spike. Because the smaller is, it makes out every 30 years, so double the predictor. And if you calculate this with a normal alpha 0.01, how much mass is in this, it's going to be 21 grams. But it's easy to calculate how much mass was dropped during the outburst in 1024. So, and of course, since the column density was inversely in alpha, so if you believe in that, you just take alpha to minus 5 and your problem is solved. But the minus 5 is requires a completely different physics. And you have neighbors of the double circuit that are doing things completely different. So, I'm very disappointed that John cannot develop this large spectra of functions. So maybe there's something basically wrong with the model. It's something missing.
Well, I would love to see a high resolution X-ray spectrum of this stuff.
Yeah,
that would help a lot. But
yeah,
that's a hard job.
Yeah. I don't think our X-ray spectrum would go up to alpha.
Well, that's thermal versus non-thermal.
Sorry?
Thermal versus non-thermal. What if this is a non-thermal spectrum?
Oh yeah, sure. But this would
be... And if it's thermal, there would be a lot of lines, and the line...
As Andrew said, this concern the hot plasma. The mystery is in the old-fashioned Keplerian.
Oh.
Old so-called cold disk.
The data will help.
I am against you there.
Maybe it's a correction
from the whole. No, it's a multi. That's what I was saying. There must be an important physical ingredient that's missing.
Yeah.
Could be a corona.
Yeah.
Large scale magnetic field.
Well, John, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh. There's one very important physical event missing, it's the radiation of the disk.
Yeah.
It has happened the year before.
Maybe you see your reflections back, of course.
You see a lot of
Yeah.